Welcome to Food for Thought. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, a cooking DVD, and a cookbook that's coming out in the fall of 2007. To keep abreast of such events and happenings, you can join our mailing list as well as learn more about what we do and who we are by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. I hope you're all doing well out there. It's so nice to hear from so many of you, and I'm proud to say that subscriptions have gone up, so keep up the great work. Pass along this podcast to friends and encourage them to subscribe. I'll keep challenging you, though, so don't think you can rest on your laurels now that they've gone up a little bit. We still want to see them increase a lot so, again, we can help spread the word and just get this podcast out to as many people as possible. I first want to thank today's sponsor. Today's sponsor is Suzanne Martin. Hi, Suzanne. Suzanne wrote to me a couple months ago a very heartfelt note, and I'll just read a little bit of what she said. She said, I wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed your podcast called Speaking Your Truth. The topic couldn't have come at a better time for me. You made me realize how important speaking your truth is and how it can empower other people as well as yourself. Your words have given me the courage to stand up for my beliefs and to honor my own truth. Thank you so much, Suzanne. I've actually heard from a number of people about that particular podcast, and that one's pretty special to me as well. And I'm really glad that that I was able to help you stand up for your own beliefs. I can't think of a better compliment than that. So I'm thrilled, and thank you so much. As I've said before, I'm just honored to be the messenger of this information. And thank you to all who have supported this podcast. Certainly let me know if you would like me to refrain from reading anything you send to me on the air. I certainly don't want to embarrass anyone. I share these thoughts with you so that all of you know what this podcast means to others and so that you know how much I want to keep doing it. To do so, I do need your help. I've seen many podcasts come and go, and you never know why. For me, podcasting is a powerful and effective way to raise awareness, and I'm really grateful for whatever you can do to help me keep this going. If you'd like to become a sponsor, you can do so by visiting CompassionateCooks.com and clicking on Support Our Podcast. If you're not comfortable doing it over the internet, you can also send a check, and the information is on the website, CompassionateCooks.com. Now, I can't say today's topic is a really happy one, but I really encourage you to stick with me. It's such vital information that will help arm us against ignorance and against excuses. One podcast listener wrote to me recently and commended me on making dry topics such as nutrition entertaining, which I'm really glad about. The last thing I want to do is put y'all to sleep. I try to balance all the different kinds of information I present to the food, cooking, nutrition and animal issues so that if you're following the podcast week to week, you don't get bored or sick of any one type of topic, or so that you don't feel overwhelmed or traumatized by too much talk about cruelty and abuse. And there is a lot to talk about. So I do hope you stick with me through this episode and know that next time you come back to listen, the subject matter will be much lighter. But this is why I do this podcast, to raise awareness and inform people of what's going on out there so that we can be informed and so that we can act on behalf of animals who don't have their own voice. There's so much to say about what we do to animals, unfortunately. There's so much to say about how we treat them, about how we disregard their own needs and interests, about how we pretend they don't feel pain. And what I want to focus on today is not the confinement or the isolation or the actual physical abuse in the form of beatings that animals endure in all of the exploitation industries, whether they're research animals or food animals or entertainment animals or animals raised for their fur, etc. What I want to address today is the physical mutilation of their bodies, literally the cutting off of body parts while they're alive, because those body parts are looked at as inconvenient or because they affect the bottom line, they affect the revenue, or merely because they're just seen as unnecessary. And I realize the word mutilate is a disturbing word, and I'm not using it for the sake of being disturbing. I'm using it because it aptly describes what I'm talking about. The root of the word means to cut up, to cut off. And that's what we do systematically to billions of animals because we can. And to my mind, to mutilate someone physically, to harm them physically, is the ultimate violation of their rights as an individual. And as we know, animals don't have rights as individuals. They're considered property under the law and certainly under the rules of speciesism. So let's start with the most commonly known type of mutilation, the act of searing off a segment of a hen's beak while she's a chick. And I say she because you should know by now that male chicks aren't raised in the egg industry. They're discarded, they're ground up, they're thrown out because, well, they don't lay eggs. They're males, and males aren't necessary in the egg industry. Now, you know that the more hens who can be crowded into a cage, the more profitable it is for those who run these operations. And the more crowded the hens are, the more stressed they are and the more uncomfortable they are and the more they attempt to create a natural pecking order. We all know what this is, the pecking order. It's this, the innate system of organization among a flock of birds in this system, not unlike the dominance hierarchy system of mammals, including humans. A bird pecks another bird who's of a lower rank, and that bird submits to pecking from a bird of a higher rank. And when you have 5 or 7 birds confined in such a small space, in such a small cage, where they can't even extend or flap their wings or build a nest or perch, or dust bathe, or perform any other natural behaviors, the birds are incredibly frustrated when they can't do any of these things. And so they very naturally peck at one another. And in doing so, they injure the flesh of their cage mates, which cuts into costs because the pecking can increase injury and death. So pecking at each other in a natural open environment is natural. The low bird on the totem pole can get away, but not so in a cage. So to prevent economic losses, it's perfectly legal and perfectly acceptable and perfectly widespread to cut off the beaks of the animals. And this doesn't stop the animals from pecking, of course, but it lessens the injury and thus lessens the economic losses. This procedure is often called debeaking, which is a bit of a misnomer because the entire beak isn't removed. Some call it beak trimming, which I don't like because it sounds as if the chick is going to the hairdresser. Whatever you call it, it's a painful procedure, which involves cutting through bone and cartilage and soft tissue with a searing hot blade. As the bird grows, their beaks are often so mutilated and still sensitive that it makes it difficult for them to eat. And of course, to preen themselves, although they really can't preen themselves very well in this confinement. And sometimes the bird's beaks are seared a second time because the beaks can grow back. The first time is done in the first week of life, and if there is a second time, it's done when they're between 12 and 20 weeks of age. And just to give you a little history, debeaking started around 1940 when a San Diego poultry farmer found that if he burned off the upper beaks of his chickens with a blowtorch, they were unable to pick and pull at each other's feathers. His neighbor adopted the idea, but used a modified soldering iron instead. A few years later, a local company began to manufacture the debeaker, a machine that sliced off the ends of birds' beaks with a hot blade, and that's what's used today. I encourage you to visit www.eggindustry.com for more information. Turkeys are also raised in confinement in large sheds that are as large as football fields. As with the closely confined battery cage hens, the birds will become frustrated and exhibit stress-induced aggression. And to minimize the damage to the flesh, again, and to the pocketbooks of the operators, baby turkeys, called poults, also undergo the painful procedure of having not only a portion of their beaks removed, but also their toes. I don't think a lot of people know this. The babies are hung upside down while the tips of their front 3 toes are exposed to microwave radiation, which kills the tissue. And often their toes are just cut off with scissors. And their snoods, the little piece of skin that hangs on top of a turkey's head, is pulled off. And they say they do this to prevent damage from frostbite or fighting. Sometimes the rear toes are also cut off with scissors. And of course, all of this is done without anesthesia. I encourage you to visit another website for more information. Visit United Poultry Concerns, www.upc-online.org. And if you just type in United Poultry Concerns, you'll find that website. There's lots of good information on there. Now, piglets. When piglets are only a couple weeks old, I'm imagining you're starting to see a pattern here. These are all babies. And of course, they're all babies that this happens to because they're basically babies when they're all killed. All of these animals are killed when they're still in their youth. So we're talking about just newborns when these kinds of things happen to them, when they're only a couple weeks old. The piglets are mutilated in many ways. First comes the castration. The pigs scrotum is cut open by a worker who pulls out his testicles, and you can imagine the piglet is screaming and writhing in pain. Some of you may have even seen this on video. And if we were to imagine for one moment that this were a puppy or a kitten, it would be unfathomable. I mean, we just can't even imagine. And it would be actually a felony in many states if this were done without anesthesia to a puppy or a kitten. But it's done on a regular basis to piglets. The second thing that happens is their ears are notched. This is very common practice in many of the species, and I'll talk more about it when I talk about goats and cattle. This is basically when, you know, chunks of their ears are removed. And this is done with scissors, and this is just for identification. This is just to make identification patterns. In addition, workers cut off piglets' incisors. They cut out the incisors with pliers that are similar to wire cutters. And all of this, again, is done without the use of painkillers. I'm just going to make this point for each species because it's important to note. And they pull out their incisors to prevent them from biting each other or chewing on themselves. And that happens out of boredom and frustration. Their tails are also cut off. And their tails are also just cut off with scissors to reduce tail biting, which is another habit that arises from boredom and frustration and stressful conditions. This pain is severe and continues for a long time, you can imagine. Visit Pigs Peace. It's a sanctuary just outside of Seattle, Washington. There's more information on this. And there's just more information on wonderful pig rescues that this sanctuary is taking care of, pigspeace.org. I think one of the most obvious ways that cattle are mutilated, something you're all familiar with, is branding. Branding is often done twice a year, and it's done by a rancher to register and identify his animals. All ranchers brand cattle, and most ranchers brand their horses too. The red hot steel tool, which is heated with a propane torch, is pressed into the side of the animal. Another method used is something called freeze branding, which causes the hair to grow back white. When it does grow back, this is no less painful than branding with a hot iron. And this is done to beef cattle, quote unquote, by the way. It's not done with dairy cows because they're always kept close by so they can be milked several times a day. Now, while the animal is restrained for the branding, this is also when they castrate the calves. They cut off parts of their ears and they cut a slice of skin off of their wattle, which is the fatty portion of the animal's neck. I'll say once again, this is all done without anesthesia. In what is called ear marking, portions of the ear are removed or cut, and they also cut the wattle so that when their skin heals on their neck, it hangs down in a certain position that's identifiable. All of this is done for identification purposes. Some ranchers use plastic tags secured to the cow's ear instead of the knife cut. And I've helped remove these tags that are inserted without anesthesia or antiseptic. And the remaining hole is often bloody and crusty and raw. This is an ear piercing. You know, this is not done with consent. And it's just a big, huge hole that's cut into the animal. Something that's done also to cattle when they're enduring all of this is dehorning and disbudding. Neither of these practices are regulated, and neither is done with anesthesia. Disbudding is the removal of the very early growth of what would become the horn if it were left to grow. The most common and most painful method is to use a hot iron. Dehorning is the removal of the horns after they've formed from the bud. Methods of dehorning include the use of wire, guillotine shears, or dehorning knives or saws. Dehorning adult cattle is not advised because their horns are connected to their sinus cavities and serious damage can occur, but this is done nonetheless. They remove the horns of cattle, and female cattle have horns as well. They do that for the same reason they cut off the beaks and toes of birds, to reduce the damage to the flesh caused by the cattle fighting or coming in contact to one another. Don't forget, this is all about the value of the flesh. That's why they kill these animals. In other words, the more the animals have bruising on their flesh, the less money there is for the people who are in the industry. That's just how it works. That's the bottom line. That's what it comes down to. Dairy cows. The dairy cows aren't branded. It doesn't mean they don't have pieces of their bodies removed. To increase the comfort of the workers who milk the cows, who attach the milking machines to their udders, a large portion of the cow's tails are cut off. So the workers aren't annoyed or inconvenienced. That's why they cut off part of their tails. It's called tail docking. If you've ever spent one moment watching cattle, you'll know that they're constantly bothered by flies and their tails are used to swat the flies away. It's the only means they have for getting rid of those flies. And the defenders of tail docking say that the risk to the workers for contracting leptospirosis, which can spread through the urine and can penetrate broken skin, is increased when the potentially urine-soaked tails hit the workers. But recent reviews of the science conclude that the available data do not support claims that tail docking reduces the risk of leptospirosis or improves the dairy workers' comfort or safety. So experts discourage tail docking, but it's done widespread in the dairy industry. And even the American Veterinary Medical Association criticizes this practice, which is pretty amazing because they don't usually go against practices in the meat, dairy, and egg industries. This procedure is typically performed without anesthetic, and it's accomplished by the application of a tight rubber ring that restricts the blood flow to the bottom two-thirds of the tail, which atrophies and detaches, or it's removed with a sharp instrument. There's another really disturbing practice that I couldn't believe when I first heard about it. I don't think I would have believed it if I didn't see it with my own eyes. You may have heard of this called a fistulated cow. A fistulated cow is a cow who's had a hole cut into her side for scientific research. And then a plastic device, which is essentially a window, is inserted so that her digestive system can be observed. Fistulated cows are pretty common in animal ag, large animal vet programs, ag schools, and students are encouraged to stick their arms in and feel the stomach. I mean, you basically just see this cow standing there with a window in her side so that we could watch her digestive system. Industry defends this as essential for understanding the health of this species, a cow with a window in her digestive system. I mentioned before that pigs and cattle have pieces of their ears removed and are also ear tagged. The same goes for goats and sheep. Goats also have their horns and buds removed, and this is incredibly painful for goats. The reasoning behind this is similar to that used in the cattle industry to reduce damage to the flesh, but also to adapt the goat's head to fit into a milk stanchion, just so they can be milked. They cut off their horns just to make it easier for them to get through the milking line. Goats and sheep are also castrated without anesthesia, and goats also have their wattles cut. Again, that wattle is the thick piece of skin on their neck. Sheep raised for their fur, which humans turn into what they call wool. I've always had a hard time calling the fur on the sheep wool because it's not wool until it's actually a commodity. It's basically their fur. Sheep raised for their fur would endure something else entirely. You may have heard of something called mulesing. This is the name for the removal of pieces of skin from around the tail of a sheep. It's common practice in Australia where most sheep are raised for their fur. Defenders say that it's a way to prevent fly strike, which is the incidence of maggots eating at their skin. And you can learn more about that by doing some research on that and the lack of necessity of this cruel practice to prevent fly strike. And this is performed with large metal shears and no anesthetic is used. They just take these large shears and they cut the pieces of skin around their tail. Now visit PETA.org for more on the campaign against mulesing. After striking a deal with the Australian wool industry, it's supposed to be phased out by 2010. So we'll see. Now it's not only the animals raised for human consumption and human fashion whose bodies are mutilated. If we take a moment to examine what we do to domestic dogs and cats, and these are the animals we're supposed to love, these are the ones we say we're supposed to care for in the society, we'll see that the choices we make about their bodies comes down to human greed, comes down to convenience and vanity, not necessity. Again, none of this is for necessity. For instance, dogs kept as research tools in laboratories have their vocal cords severed. And I've even heard of people doing this to their own dogs. This is merely so that the researchers don't have to listen to the dogs barking, you know, communicating. Other ways we mutilate the animals we're supposed to love is by cropping their ears and tails. These are certain breeds, right? This is cosmetic surgery. This is major surgery, but it's cosmetic surgery that has no medical or practical purpose other than to continue this tradition to meet certain standards for certain breeds set forth by the American Kennel Club. I remember when I was volunteering at an animal shelter many years ago back in New Jersey, and I remember this dog came in. It was so heartbreaking. A father and son had found this dog walking around on the street, and basically someone had taken scissors to her ears to crop them. And of course, again, using no anesthesia, which is what I'm talking about. If we saw a dog walk in with their ears cropped with scissors, and we'd be horrified at that. I'm sure some of you are, you know, kind of squirming in your seat right now. That's what we do to all of these animals that I've just named. And they were just bloody and raw and crusty, and she was in so much pain. The good news is that the father and the son who found her adopted her, and she's very, very lucky to have been found by them. A hideous procedure that's gotten a lot of attention lately, thanks to activists who are trying to ban this practice in many cities and states, is the declawing of cats, the declawing of domestic cats. Declawing is not a painless procedure, and it's also not done for medical reasons. The cat's claw, as you probably know, it's not a toenail at the end of the toe, as in other animals. It's a movable digit attached to muscle, as a finger might be. And to declaw a cat is to cut off half of their toes. And this is just another way we remove body parts for our own convenience. Finally, and related to this, is the barbaric act of keeping wild animals as pets. And aside from all the other ethical problems with this, people who do keep wild animals often have their claws and sharp teeth removed. The injustice of that, the perversity of that, is so striking to me. Just having these dignified animals with all their strength and dignity just cut off. It's like bear baiting. Remember that practice done years ago when a declawed and detoothed bear was chained up and essentially mauled by a dog? That was the entertainment for the people who came and paid for that show. And if you don't know about the bears in China that are confined in small cages, practically no bigger than their own bodies, just to extract the bile from their gallbladder, their claws are removed as well. And in addition, these bears are subjected to painful methods of bile extraction, whereby a steel catheter is inserted into the abdomen. And this is known as the free dripping technique. So they're just there with this catheter, this metal catheter, in their bodies, so that their bile could drip from their bodies. For more on that, for more on the farming of bears for their bile, please visit www.animalsasia.org. It's a fantastic organization that's been incredibly effective at rescuing these bears and trying to ban this practice. Unfortunately, I'm probably leaving out some examples, and certainly let me know if there are some that I'm leaving out, but that's it in a nutshell. And it's just amazing to me. And again, these are practices that are aside from all of the kind of the obvious acts of cruelty. You know, when we think of killing the animals, we're killing them. We're slicing their throats. We're hanging them up by their legs. And then there's also the abuse, which I do want to talk about at another time. That's just, again, just outside of all of the regular practices that occur in an industry that exists solely for the purpose of killing animals. There's also the stress and all the violence that happens, and just taking all of the anger and frustration out on the animals. There's that. So there's this component too, which, you know, this is done on small farms too. This is not just about these large animal factories. This is about commodifying animals and making them our property. This is what speciesism is. By virtue of making animals our property, we can do to them what we want with no regard for their feeling, because all of it comes down to economic necessity. I just try to imagine sometimes, my cat going through these things. You know, like, I think of the animals that I know and love, and I think for a moment these things happening to them that happen to animals on animal factories and in slaughterhouses and in research laboratories and on fur farms and in circuses. And I find it really painful to hold that thought for too long. It's kind of perverse when I hold it for too long. And I think if it's just too painful for us to contemplate having the animals we love terrorized and cut up, I think we have to ask ourselves, what's the difference for those animals for whom nobody is grieving? It's the same for them. It shouldn't be about us. It's about them. It's about their suffering. Anyway, that's just my two cents. I hope you all pushed through to the end of this segment. I know it's not pleasant, but it's the truth, and that's all we have. And if we can't look at the truth, then we're not being honest with ourselves, and we're not really fully understanding the scope of this problem and the violence that this creates in our society, in our own hearts, and with one another. So I'm just the messenger. Thank you for letting me be the messenger, and I hope you've received this information openly and with compassion. For the animals, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thank you. Thank you for listening.